Welcome to Living Villa Capelli, where we learn life is so much sweeter when you add a little Italian to it. And now your hosts, Paul Capelli and Stephen Crutchfield.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm Stephen.
I'm Paul. And who's this little Italian you're adding to life?
We're adding a little
Italian. I'm not so little.
You're not. But a little Italian, everybody, helps make the day better. Welcome to Living Villa Capelli, everybody. This is episode, I believe, number 11. And welcome. And we're going to be talking today about a little bit about Tuscany and Paul's trip recently to go visit his relatives in Tuscany.
I went home.
Yes, that's where Paul was born. Before we start, I want to again thank everybody so much for all the reviews. You actually helped us reach number one in iTunes rating new and noteworthy. So we really, really appreciate that. It was really amazing to see us there. So thank you. And again, help spread the word to all your friends and family. You know, that's how we help get a little Italian into everybody's life, if you help us.
But I don't know we were number one in overall.
Not overall. Overall. Oh. I can't. Sorry. And I think it was one of the categories. I think it was arts.
Oh.
There's like three categories.
Okay. Well, that's different.
Well, we were in the top 20 overall. Overall.
That's
but this
good.
Is like ahead of like Shaquille O'Neal and NPR shows and all these guys. So
that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I like that.
No, I love that. I'm very happy. I'm happy you guys are supporting us again. So, you know. Keep it up. Thank you. So I want to give a shout out to some of our fans here that give us a little review. We have BF in NYC. We have Brig. Oh, God. These iTunes names. Mine's not much better, but some of these iTunes names are so difficult. Brigatine, I believe. There's Heather, Christiane. And then I'll read, here we go. New Jam 76 says, this new podcast is enjoyable to listen to. There's great chemistry between the two hosts. We have him fooled. Mm-hmm. And they clearly have found the perfect outlet to share their passion with the world. So, yay. We appreciate those.
We have a face for radio.
Yes, exactly. And my voice is not so good tonight because I keep slurring.
Because you're drunk.
No, I only had one martini.
Liar, you're in a second.
I've only had one.
Oh, I see.
Yes. All right. So, Paul, it's actually been about 2 weeks now.
Yeah, about 2 weeks.
Went up to Tuscany, and you wanted to say, you want to give them a little why
yeah.
you were going?
Yeah. Well, I was born in Pisa, in Tuscany. Pisa's in Tuscany. That's where the major airport is for Tuscany. One of the crappiest airports I've ever been in my life. I mean, I left Pisa in 1962, and I think the airport back in 1962 was better than what it is today. I mean, it's just a dump. It's horrible. It's the gateway to Tuscany, which is arguably the most visited region in all of Italy, and really the only way to get to Florence is still you got to fly into Pisa. Delta in the summer even has direct flights from New York to Pisa, and it is like a dump. It's horrible. I mean, the airport here in Bari puts it to shame. It's about five times bigger. It's brand new. This thing is like, it reminds me of a small LaGuardia airport. I mean, LaGuardia is one of the biggest shithole airports.
It's actually probably about the same. No, I mean, as far as just like a number of gates.
It's much smaller.
No.
But it is a dump like LaGuardia. LaGuardia is another dumpy airport. But anyway, so I was born in Pisa, moved to America in 1962. I won't tell you what year I was born, but most of you can probably figure it out.
Paul's birthday's coming up, so you all should wish him a happy birthday and send lots of gifts. So hopefully to get here
No gifts.
No.
No cape.
He wants lots of gifts.
No cape. actually, I have a very, very funny story. I don't think I ever told it on here. I'm 7 years old. My mother had to go to the United States before me because she had to then sponsor me. So she left me in Italy for about 3 months, with my grandmother and actually one of her cousins who was also from Terlizzi, but who was living in Pisa. And they pretty much, you know, took care of me for those 3 months while I was up there. And so I'm 7 years old. I'm wearing shorts. It was May. It was early May. I think May 6th or May 9th. I forget. I get those 2 days mixed up. One of those days was the day my dad died when I was 23 months old. And the other day is when I went to America. So I get on the Alitalia airplane with shorts and sandals. And I'm under the care of Alitalia. I have a little tag around my neck saying if I get lost, I'm going to turn into Boston. I was a little like Dondi, you know.
And the pictures are so cute. Maybe I'll, if I can find a picture of him when
I have
little,
yeah, there's some pictures. My passport picture is very cute.
Yeah,
with a little bow tie. So I'm on the Alitalia airplane. And I'm like the cutest thing ever. The pilot invites me into the cabin. Now, this was not a scene from Airplane, right? Like, no. Hey, do you like Gladiator movies? Have you ever seen a grown man naked? It wasn't anything like that at all.
So now I have to mark this as explicit, by the way. This, well, not that I don't mark all of our podcasts as explicit.
That wasn't explicit. But I did say shithole earlier, though.
You did not.
Yes, I did. About LaGuardia.
See, it's about got LaGuardia. A lot together.
Okay, so it's an explicit podcast tonight, as usual. So I get invited into the cockpit. I'm like 7 years old from Italy. This is like the most amazing thing ever. We had to stop, I think, in Milan because back then, you know, you made multiple stops. And I remember the flight attendants, the stewardesses back then, the stewardesses took me for ice cream at the in the airport. And so I land in Boston, Logan Airport. Logan, by the way, is the name of my son. It's Scottish for giant field near Boston where airplanes land. No, it's not really. But that is my son's name. So I land at Logan Airport, and the stewardesses take me down to get my luggage. I get my luggage. The doors open up, and there are all these Italians, you know, outside baggage claim waiting for their relatives to arrive. And they're all waving and cheering and... I see my mom, my uncle, my grandmother, and of course I'm ecstatic, you know, 7-year-old kid, first time in America, and, you know, first time seeing my mom in 3 months, so that was pretty exciting and quite traumatic. That's why I sometimes stutter.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. What? No.
I was going to say, do you want to explain why, though? Because your mom had to come over first.
I did that already.
You did?
Yeah, so she had to sponsor me.
Okay, sorry.
Come on, Stephen, listen to the podcast,
sorry,
for Pete's sakes. He's from Texas. He doesn't understand this stuff.
No.
So I see my mom, my grandmother, my uncle, and yeah, I go running up to them. Everyone's crying, happy. We get in my uncle's little Valiant, white Valiant, remember, with the fake wheel on the back of it, and I think it was push-button transmission in it. Tiny little car. All of us crowd in with my little luggage, and we start to drive home to Dorchester in Boston. And I keep looking out the back window as we're leaving the airport. And my mother says to me, "What's wrong? Is something wrong?" I said, "Well, where were all those people that were at the airport? Aren't they coming with us?" So even back then, I had the ego the size of Wisconsin. I thought that all the people at the airport were there cheering me on and waiting for me. I thought, you know, they were welcoming me to America.
And his ego has not changed whatsoever?
No, I think it's gotten bigger.
No.
So that was me flying from Pisa to the U.S., and I've done a lot of flying in my life. I mean, when I was working advertising and all that stuff, I'm a million miler plus on Delta and all. So I just love flying. And I remember every time I would go back to Pisa, as soon as I got near the Pisa airport and you could see the Leaning Tower in the background and the Piazza dei Miracoli, Miracle Square. I mean, I just got this feeling in me of like, oh boy, this is my Pisa. This is my hometown. I've always loved Pisa. It's just, anybody says anything bad about Pisa, I go ballistic.
No, I kind of agree. No, Pisa is a beautiful town.
It is a beautiful town.
It's beautiful.
Right on the Arno River, you know, the same river that runs through Florence. People from Pisa and Florence do not get along. Those really were the classic city-states before Italy became unified. So Pisa and Florence and Genoa, which is not in Tuscany, it's in Liguria. Livorno, Pisa and Livorno, those people hate each other's guts.
And they're 5 kilometers away.
Oh, yeah, something like that. Yeah. So half my family lives in Livorno now. But I just always get this feeling when I go to Pisa. It's crazy. It's like this really intense nostalgia that I get, I guess, about going home. Even though I only spent 7 years of my life there, the first 7 years, something just comes over me that I just can't describe. So I go to Pisa this time because I have a cousin, actually my dad's first cousin, who lives up in the hills outside of Pisa, between Pisa and Florence, or Pisa, between Pisa and San Miniato, which is one of these amazing medieval towns on a hilltop. So every year we order prosciutto made by my cousin specifically for us, for me actually, because he had the coolest thing is that I go there and I get these legs of prosciutto that he's cured for I don't know how many months. And it can only be done in the winter, by the way. Over the winter months, but it has a little cardboard tag with a wire through it that goes through the prosciutto leg, and on it is written Paolo, the name I was born with.
Yes, beautiful. And it's funny because for them it's just probably a piece of like cardboard they found like lying around. They write.
No, Stephen, it's a special piece of cardboard just for me.
No, but it's something, but that's actually what makes it kind of cool. It's like this, I don't know. It's homemade. It's like, it's nothing.
Steven will put some pictures up of what the prosciutto looks like with my name on it.
No, it's
so
cool.
It's like, you know, I mean, how many people can say like literally, not figuratively, but literally, that prosciutto has my name on it.
Exactly.
And that prosciutto has my name on it. A few months ago, I went up there to pick up my two legs of prosciutto. And Tuscan prosciutto is much different than prosciutto di Parma.
And no offense to the Parma people, but it's much better.
Well, it's obviously a matter of taste, but I do agree because
I love it.
Prosciutto di Parma is much more delicate.
Yes, I mean,
it is really, really wonderful.
It's very good, yes, yeah. But I agree. But
and you have to slice it really, really, really thin because yes. You really want to you want the stuff to melt in your mouth.
Yes.
But Tuscan prosciutto is known for its saltiness. It's much, much saltier than prosciutto di Parma, which I think to most people, you know, salt really wakes up your taste buds. So when that salt hits your taste buds, it's like, oh my God, this is amazing. Which brings us to another thing about Tuscany, which is their bread. Tuscan bread has no salt in it. Some people at first find it kind of insipid.
I did. I must tell you, the first time I tasted it, I thought, what the hell is this sandpaper that you're putting in my mouth?
Sawdust.
It was just weird. It was, especially for an American taste buds, the first time I had it, I was like, this is gross. And I will say, and I've never appreciated it literally until this last time Paul went, he brought some back. And I was like, huh, this is actually not bad, especially when obviously you pair it with
the salty prosciutto. And, there are a couple different stories of why Tuscan bread has no salt. One of them is because salt was being taxed heavily by whoever was in charge at the time. But the other one is that it's actually linked specifically to Tuscan prosciutto. Because the prosciutto is salty, the bread didn't need any salt. Otherwise, it would all be too salty. But so I brought a piece back this time of Tuscan bread, a big chunk of it. And I got to tell you, not only was it really, really good, but the smell of it was amazing.
Yeah.
Smell of the bread was just... It was really, I mean, you really could good. Smell the yeast. It was great.
But this time, I will say, but well, I don't know if you can get into this, you didn't actually go to pick up the prosciutto. That was in...
No, of course not. Yeah, Stephen, am I telling the story or are you?
All right, go.
So... and the reason I brought back the bread wasn't really for the prosciutto, which I didn't pick up this time, but I picked up last time. It's because Tuscany does another thing that is just blow away. It's going to sound
for most people
risky and kind of gross.
Yeah,
maybe
most people
some
are
going to
disgusting. We're probably going to throw. But, yeah, don't tune out.
But it is like the tastiest thing you will ever eat in your life. And here's what it is: it is raw pork sausage.
Seriously, guys, you have to get on the plane right now and come get this stuff.
Yes.
I mean, when Paul's son tried it, Logan, he alluded to it earlier, he was like, where has this been my entire life? It is so good.
It's amazing. It's really amazing. So what you do is you get a link of pork sausage, raw, with these special herbs and spices they put in. It just has this flavor that it just blows you away. You make a slice down the skin of the sausage. You take the skin off, and you spread the sausage on a piece of bread, of Tuscan unsalted bread. And then you put salt and pepper on it, and a good amount of olive oil on it, and you just chomp down on it. It is unbelievable.
So good. And I will say, to expand on this a little bit, it is only in Tuscany, I believe, right?
Well, that's the only place I know.
I mean, because we've asked our butchers here, like, can you make this? They're like, I really don't know how to do this. But what we found out from one butcher when we were up there is that, from my understanding, is this is basically they're making. This is the same process they would do if you just hung up the sausage; it would turn into salami.
Right.
So it has like a little bit of white wine and salt and all the spices that you would normally find in salami. So it just hasn't necessarily cured and dried yet.
So it's basically raw salami.
Yeah, it's raw. Yeah, salami. Yeah, basically.
It is totally raw though. I mean, it's not totally like it's not like it's cured or, you know, like fake raw.
But I'm
it's
wondering
real
if some
raw
of that
raw.
Sort of kind of
what?
Cures you, sort of protects you, like the white wine and the
well, yeah, but
salt.
It's not cured.
Not cured, no. Not yet, yes.
Not air cured. Right? Anyway, yeah. So raw Italian, raw Tuscan pork sausage on a slice of bread is the most heavenly thing you will ever eat in your life. And this time, actually, the butcher that I went to, because I always bring some back, of course, and it's never enough. I'll bring back like, you know, 4 or 5 pounds of this stuff. And you can actually keep it in your fridge for quite a while.
Yeah.
And they told us that if you want to keep it for a long time, you take the sausage, you put it in a plastic container, you fill it with water, and you put it in the freezer. And then the freezer, you know, turns obviously the water to ice, and the sausage gets sort of buried in this ice. And then when you defrost it, it's just like it was fresh. We haven't tried that yet, but...
No, because it doesn't last that long.
Exactly, because we eat problem. It so fast. Between me, Stephen, and my daughter, Casey. Casey is like crazy about this sausage.
I must say, I eat it without the bread because I don't eat much bread. But a little enough bread. But it is still good. It's still so good. I mean, guys, like seriously, buy a plane ticket now and go get that stuff. Anyway.
So this time I went to Pisa and to visit my cousins up in the town. It's a little tiny hamlet called Partino, Partino, which is in the comune, which would be like the township of Lari, Lari, which is another great little medieval tiny town with an amazing castle in it. And so this time I went up to get pancetta, because my cousin also makes the most amazing pancetta in the world.
It's even better than a prosciutto.
Yes. Pancetta is basically bacon, rolled bacon, that they, you know, they cure it, they let it air dry.
It's just not smoked.
Basically. Right. No, it's not smoked. But all bacon isn't smoked.
That's true. Not all of it. No. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. So it's just salted, lots of garlic in it, rolled up, hung to dry. And again, guess what? It has my name on it. Little cardboard tags with Paolo.
And they're huge.
Yes. Actually, they're so big that the first time I brought it back here to Telizzi, people had never seen them before. They were so big that people called them the baby. Yes. Do you have any more of the baby in the fridge?
It's so...
Casey, my daughter, and I came back the first time with one of these on the train, and it was just so beautiful to even look at that we took it out of the bag, out of the wrapper, and put it on the little tray between us on the train and just sat it there. We were taking pictures of it. Love this.
Well, I don't remember if we've talked about this before, too. When we came years ago, we got this... My first time meeting Cousin Dino, who talks like this, yes, and has three fingers on one hand. Blah, blah, blah. I don't understand a word he says.
I understand Italian, and I don't understand a word he says.
But basically, we bought this huge pancetta from him. Huge. I mean, we had to cut it in half just to fit in the suitcases. So we split them up between two suitcases because we figured, okay, if we get caught coming back, this is when we lived in New York, we'll bring it back to New York.
This is actually a good travel tip.
Yes. So we're coming back to New York, and we figured, like, if we get caught, one of us will get through, one of us won't, basically.
So, right. So we cut it in half.
One of us will get arrested, one of us won't.
It was King Solomon cutting the baby in two.
And so we said, okay, we'll do this. And then we were at the Rome airport, and I bought some sausages and oil from my dad. Sorry, Dad, about this story.
In a jar.
They were sealed. They were in oil, preserved, all this stuff.
And you bought it at duty free, you know, inside the security zone. Everything's fine.
Yeah. So then we get to New York, and I was like, Paul, we have to obviously declare that we have meat because, I mean, if you can't, like, forget that you have...
Like 15 pounds of bacon in your luggage.
Oh, I totally forgot. My cousin gave that to me at the last minute. Like, you have to declare you have meat. So we declared it on the little customs form.
Because if you don't declare it, by the way, if you don't declare it and they find it, they give you a huge fine. Yeah. If you declare it and they find it, all they do is take it away from you and throw it away.
Yeah, so we declared that we had meat. So we went up to the customs guy, and he's like, oh, what meat do you have? And Paul's like, well, we bought this sausage in Rome. He's like, oh, well, no, I have to see it. And Paul's like, what do you mean? He's like, no, I need to see it. What is it?
And I'm sorry, look, it's just a gift for Stephen's dad.
Yeah. We bought it duty-free.
Yeah, it's sealed. They said it was okay. No, I got to see it. I need to see it.
So I put it on my
back. Please, come on, let us go through. it's just a jar of sausage and oil.
Yeah. So I pulled it out of my bag. Paul handed it to the guy, and he was like, well, I have to take this.
I'm like, no, come on, please. It's a gift. You know, it's our first time to Italy. We're bringing it back for Stephen's dad in Texas. He's never seen anything like this.
No. I have to take it.
Oh, we're like, oh, okay, all right, fine. And then he says, all right, go. You can go now.
Yeah, you can go.
So we got through with 15 pounds of bacon for a jar of sausage.
It was great. We're like, the sacrificial lamb, that's the key, guys.
If you give them something to take and you keep the rest.
Yes.
So for the past couple of years, I've been going up to Pisa twice a year, once to pick up prosciutto when it's ready, and once to pick up pancetta. And I used to get one prosciutto and one pancetta. Now I get two prosciutti, and this time I ordered three pancetta because now that we're going to open up our little bar restaurant here at the villa, I figured we're going to need this stuff because this is what we're going to sell because people are going to go crazy for this stuff.
I mean, and I will say, guys, the pancetta, it melts in your mouth. I will say for the first time this year.
We made our own. Not nearly as good.
I want to steal their recipe, whatever it is.
Right.
you didn't even mention, too, Alt. This is another interesting fact about his cousin. His cousin, how old is actually Dino now?
Dino's in his 80s.
Yeah, not doing good. But the actual farm and the whole production from the olive oil to the pancetta to the prosciutto
is now handled by his nieces, my second cousins or third cousins.
All women.
So it's all these products they make. The women go out on the tractors, they prune the trees, they pick the olives, they make the oil, they make the pancetta, they make the prosciutto.
Yeah.
They do all the farming because my dad's cousin Dino is on crutches now. He's broken his hip twice. you know, if God wants him to die, God's going to have to come down and, like, shoot him in the head and knife him or something, because this guy ain't going anytime soon. And the house, by the way.
Oh.
The house in the...
They have no idea where they... I mean, they just... They probably do have some idea, but it's...
It's on this little hilltop that, you know, most of their land is in a valley, so, the, you know, the, even the tractor has trouble getting down there. But you stand in the courtyard, the front yard of this house, and all you see is Tuscan countryside dotted with little hilltops, towns, castles on the tops of the hilltops. It is the most amazing place you will ever see in your life.
If anybody's interested in a place, let us know. We'd love to buy it. Because they're actually probably looking to sell, because he's getting up in age.
Up in age. He's like almost dead.
Exactly. And the girls are to the point where they're like almost done taking care of the property. So they're actually looking to sell. And we want to do a Villa Capelli Tuscany, but... And yes. So probably a little bit out of our range right now, and
we would also love to have the women stay on, because we would love to do an offshoot of the brand, which is, you know, products made by women.
It's so
by
amazing.
Tough women.
I mean, seriously, if anybody's interested in this, I mean, that's a golden opportunity.
It's great. It's a great place. Yeah. So this time, I ordered 3 pancette to bring back, and they're just like the most beautiful things you've ever seen. Just to hold them and smell them, they were a little over 4 kilos each, so over almost 9 pounds each.
Yeah.
And I'm flying Ryanair, where, you know, if you check your bags, you got to pay like $1,000 or something. No, it's not 1,000, but it's a lot of money.
50,
so I put them in my carry-on. I get to the airport, and they go through the scanner. And the security woman behind the computer screen is looking at a screen, and she gets this smile on her face, and she looks at me, and she says, "Do you have rigatino?" Rigatino is what they call pancetta in Tuscany. Rolled up pancetta is called rigatino.
What does it actually translate to?
I have no idea.
Oh, okay.
And I said, "Yes, as a matter of fact, I do." She says, "Oh, my God, it reminds me of my grandfather." And I said to her, "Well, it's rigatino from Lari, you know, the town." She said, "Of course it is. Where else are you going to get the best rigatino in the world?" And they let me through with my 25 pounds of pancetta.
You're flying domestically. So
yes, exactly. But the other weird thing is that, so I'm driving back after picking up my pancetta from my cousins, and I have it in the back seat of the car. And the car now is getting filled with the smell of this pancetta, and I'm going like crazy over it. What's wrong, Stephen? I see a bad look on your face.
No, I was trying. So
I'm taking these back roads back to my other cousin's house, where I'm sleeping for the 2 nights that I'm there, and I'm driving along the Arno River. I'm following the flow of the Arno as it goes from these hilltop towns down towards Pisa. And this nostalgia, this wave of nostalgia just comes over me. And I'm like freaking out. It's like, why do I feel like I need to be here? I need to like stay here. This is, you know, you get this feeling in your bones, in your body about this is my home. This is my homeland. This is where I really came from. This is where I want to be. And I started thinking that, you know, it's just this overwhelming nostalgic feeling. And I start thinking about the end of my life. Now that we have friends who, you know, like we all do, that who either die because of, you know, their time has come, they're of a certain age, and other friends who die suddenly out of nowhere, either a car accident or a heart attack or a stroke or whatever. And, you know, now that I'm about to be of a certain age myself, you start thinking about these funerals that you go to, and you think, you know, what do the families do when this happens? Where does that person really want to be laid to rest. What does that person want for their funeral? You know, because when it happens suddenly, nobody knows anything, especially when you're younger. So a couple of months ago, when a good friend of ours died suddenly in a car accident, very young guy, I started thinking about, you know, I need to let Stephen and my kids know what I would like done if this happens to me, because you never know. You just never, ever know. So, you know, I said to them, I want four urns made with my ashes. I want to be cremated. I don't want to be buried. I don't want to be put underground. It's kind of like too gross, even though, you know, I mean, being put in an oven isn't exactly the nicest thing in the world either.
He's still going to make you into a cake.
So, I want like four urns, one for each of my kids and one for Steven. And then you can do it with those urns, whatever you want. But as I'm driving through Tuscany and driving along the Arno River, where I spent the first 7 years of my life, and after that, you know, I would go back to Italy every summer, and I would always go to Pisa, and I would, you know, I spent most of my adolescent summers in Pisa, driving around on a scooter, you know, with like the coolest shirts and pants and sandals that were the latest rage in the late 60s, early 70s, driving along the Arno River on my little moped scooter. And I'm driving along the Arno, just a couple of weeks ago, going back towards my other cousin's house. And it dawned on me, I said, because people always talk about, okay, I want to be cremated, and I want my ashes to be spread out over, you know, under an oak tree. Or I want my ashes to be thrown into the sea. And I figured, okay, here's what I really want. I want someone to take my ashes, or at least some of my ashes, and pour them into the source of the Arno River. Because it's the Arno River that has always flown through my life. It's the one strong memory of my life. Now, unfortunately, I don't know where the source of the Arno River is, but I guess so. Stephen and
I'll Google it.
Okay, Stephen, Casey, any of my other kids. If something should happen to me before it's really my time, can you like just find out where the source of the Arno River is and let me flow downstream through Tuscany, past Florence, into Pisa, through Pisa, and out at, it ends at Marina di Pisa, into the Tyrrhenian Sea, and that's where I want my final resting place.
And the sea would go into the ocean, which would go all the way to New York, which is your other life.
No, I don't give a shit about that.
Right. Now, on a happier note, that was very, very spiritual here. For some practical points for you guys, Paul touched on this a little bit, because a lot of this episode was about prosciutto and pancetta. I will say, if you guys buy any pancetta or prosciutto in the States, please go to your butcher or your deli guy, wherever you're buying it from, and have him slice it for you. Like Paul said, it has to be razor thin. You're never going to get it razor thin with a knife. We have a deli slicer here. It makes a world of difference. The thinner, it melts in your mouth that way. And so if you're buying something like that, you need to get those pieces that you're buying really sliced really, really thin. And they'll probably pack it for you really nicely so that it'll last in your fridge. It won't dry out too much.
But the one thing that you won't find, unless you live in a farm in Illinois or Wisconsin or something, is real artisanal pancetta or bacon made by a farmer. It makes a world of difference.
No, it's true.
If you can't find it, come visit us here, and we will load you up with pork and fat and raw sausage.
Yeah, I was gonna say the pancetta is going to be very difficult. The prosciutto, because you will find prosciutto di Parma in the States, which is, you know, regulated, and they have a really good market, and they bring it in. So you'll find that in the States. But I will say, just slice it then. Otherwise, it's just, you're not going to enjoy it.
Otherwise, just chewing on meat.
Yeah, you are. It's just going to chew on a piece of meat. It's like, it's just not the same thing. And I will say, and the other big tip I have for this, Paul just introduced me to this probably only last year, actually, is most people know prosciutto with melon. I will say, yes, that's good. And it is tasty. The real original is prosciutto with figs. If you can get good fresh figs, especially those who live in California, Texas, mm-hmm. you're getting the fresh figs off the tree that are super sweet, not the ones you get in the store, which are picked green and shipped because otherwise they fall apart. If you can get those fresh figs that are like melt in your mouth sweet, and you put that with that salty prosciutto, guys, that's like, there is almost nothing better in the world paired together. It is amazing. So that's my other big tip. Don't.
Swing!
Yes. The melon is great, but with the figs, it's a whole nother level. It yes. is amazing. So those are my two big prosciutto and pancetta tips, pretty much.
Mm-hmm. And don't cook pancetta because it just gets too salty. It's not like cooking bacon. It just doesn't work.
But if you're in a bind for carbonara, most people do use pancetta. It's not the traditional. The traditional is guanciale,
which is pig cheek.
It's actually the cheek. But it's very similar flavor. But yes, that's the only exception I would say is if you're making.
I didn't mean don't cook it. I meant don't fry it.
Yeah. Don't put it in a pan like a bacon.
No.
Nothing like that. Don't do that.
Now, I had my catharsis here of my trip to Tuscany and Pisa, and I think we need to go off the air.
Yes, we're good. All right, guys. Arrivederci. Thanks so much
Ciao,
for being here.
Before we go,
we should just tell everybody they can find us always on Villa Capelli and everywhere.
Right. VillaCapelli.com.
Yes, and then and everywhere on Facebook, Instagram, Pinterest. Just look us up on Villa Capelli.
Order our products.
Yes.
Help me feed my kids
<That's>
and our three dogs and 20 cats.
Oh, yes. We just had a few.
And we had two pigs, but it's so hot now that we put them in the freezer. Get it?
Yes. Tarantum. But all the at villacapelli.com, it links to podcasts. There's links to staying at the villa if you guys are interested. And with that, I think we're good.
We bid you adieu.
All right. Arrivederci.
Buonanotte. Ciao.